Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, June 14th. This is the women's Mishnah share. We're in Maseches Chul in 8th Perek.
Okay, Rabotai. Okay. Okay, Rabotai. I want to begin tonight by just reviewing one aspect of the halacha that we mentioned last week. We mentioned along the way that in relationship to all mixtures of non-kosher and a kosher product, you are not permitted to artificially create the ratio of bittul. Not permitted to go ahead and take something that is not kosher, that fell into a pot with something that's kosher, and it's less than 60 to 1. You're not permitted to add on purpose. That's correct. And by basa b'chalav, we mentioned last week that prohibition does not exist. By the mixture of milk and meat, that prohibition does not exist because you're not relying, when there is 60 to 1, you're not relying on bitul. But as we pointed out last week, if there is less than 60 to 1 of meat against the milk, or if there is more than 60 to 1, you have not simply created the prohibition of basa b'chalav. You haven't created the prohibition yet. So the Isur of Ein Mivaklan Isur Lechatila does not apply. So I just want to, if you go to page 3 for a moment. Page 3. This is in Shulchan Aruch. As you can see on the top, Hilchot Ta'aruvot, the laws of mixtures. So the Mechaber writes in Se'if Hei, Ein mivatlin isur lechatchila. You are not permitted to be mivatel an isur initially. Va'afilu nafal l'toch heter. Not only, he says, can you not simply create a mixture. You know what? I have a non-kosher piece of meat. Why throw it in the garbage? I'll just throw it into something that has 60 times. That's it. I'll just throw it in. That you can't do. And even if it fell in, but the ratio was only 1 to 59, you can't add 2 units of anything else that is permissible. Afilu nafal l'toch heter. Even if something fell into something that is permissible, a prohibited item fell into something that was prohibited, that is permissible. She'ein bo shi'ur livatlan. But there is insufficient quantity to be mivatel, the prohibited item. Ein mosifin alav heter k'dei livatlo. You are not permitted to add any product which would now contribute to be mevatel, the prohibited item. That's also included in the Isur. Avar ubitlo. What happens if I went ahead and did add something? Either I threw it in initially, I had something that was prohibited, and I just threw it into a pot with kosher stuff in it, or it fell into the pot, and I added 2-3 items of the kosher variety in order to create bitul, osher riba alav, I added to the quantity. Im bishogeg mutar. Im bishogeg mutar. If this happened accidentally, then it's permissible. I didn't realize it, or you know, somebody was unaware of what's going on, and someone else came and threw in the permissible item to create the ratio. But he didn't know that there was something prohibited in this pot as well. He just didn't know. So under those circumstances, if it was done bishogeg, it is permissible. However, However, to page 4. Im bimezid, if you did so deliberately, asur, it is prohibited. The mixture is prohibited. Limivatel atzmo. It is only prohibited to whom? To the person who did it. Im hu shelo. If this, if these items in the pot legally belong to him. But if I go into your house and there is a piece of meat which is non-kosher and I throw it in. Or it fell in and I add something permissible in order to what? To create the ratio of bittul. Nothing happens to your pot. Nothing happens. Because I can't prohibit something that what? That doesn't belong to me. I can't. So if I did so, if I threw in a piece of meat, which is non-kosher, and I threw it into the mixture, and there was a ratio of bittul, there was 61 to 1. Or a piece of meat, non-kosher, fell into your pot, and there was only 1 to 59. And I added 2 units, you're allowed to eat it. Because now, de facto, what ratio does exist here? 61 to 1. And I had no right to do it. So the halacha is not going to penalize you, the rightful owner. It's only if the rightful owner did it for the purpose of doing what? Creating the ratio of bitul. But if it was not done by the owner of the product, then you are permitted to take advantage of it, and we apply the rule Ein Adam Oser Davar She'eino Shelo. You cannot prohibit something that doesn't belong to you. Can't prohibit it.
So the neighbor can eat that dish?
Yeah, the rightful owner can eat it. Yes, the rightful owner.
And the neighbor who came in and did that, he could eat it also?
No.
He can't, because he did it.
Okay. But it's not going to be prohibited for the owner of the item.
And doesn't trafe the pot.
What? And it does not trafe up the pot.
But this rule must be limited, this Ein Adam Oser, because if a guy just came in regular, and he just cooked trafe of meat in my pot, it's not his meat, it's not his pot. It still trafes up my pot.
That's correct.
So this rule is
yeah, it's talking about where the ratio of bitul does exist. That's correct. The ratio of bitul exists. But you're not supposed to do it. But when are you not supposed to do it? If it's your own. If it's not yours, you don't have that ability to prohibit it for the rightful owner.
One step further, can I do that bit on purpose? Can I have you?
No. That's the next line. V'chein lemi shenit batel bishvilo. If this was organized, orchestrated, I'm not going to do it myself. I'll tell you to do it. To create the ratio of bitul. That's no good as well.
Does it matter if it's a guy or...
No difference, Jew or Gentile.
What if it's someone you employ, like what? A housekeeper?
Same thing. If she did it, deliberately?
No.
So then if it's b'shogeg, then it's okay. And there is a ratio of bitul now. Even if it's not a housekeeper. Anybody who did it unintentionally... Yeah, no.
But you can't ask them to do it.
Right.
Unintentionally. You're not talking.
Right. And now we're on page 5. Page 5 for a second. Finishing the bold print. Ulisha'ar kol adam mutar. However, anybody else is permitted to eat this, with the exception of the person who either did it or instructed someone else to do it. So now go back one second to page 3. And exactly to the right of the bracket is on the right hand side, there is a shach where it says letter Zion. See that? See the shach on the letter Zion? Says the shach. Kosav HaRashba, in his book called Torat HaAdam, Bayit Dalet Reisha Gimel, V'Horan B'Perek Gid HaNasheh, that, and the Ran in the seventh Perek of Chulin, Dehainu Midrabanan L'Da'at HaTosafot. Hainu Midrabanan L'Da'at HaTosafot. This prohibition of Ein Mevatlin Isur L'Chatchila is only a rabbinic prohibition. Nowhere in the Torah can you find a pasuk that writes you're not allowed to be mevatel and isur lechatchila. So it's an isur derabbanan. Okay, it's an isur derabbanan. I'm not saying you shouldn't observe it. Of course you should. Avol lidat haraavad asur midoraita. According to the Ravid, you are not permitted. From a biblical standpoint, you are not permitted to artificially create an isur of bitul. Not permitted to. And it's a little difficult to find the pasuk which upon which this is based in the Chumash. If it's an isur d'oraita, you have to somehow link it, at least link it, with a remez at least, to a pasuk in the Chumash. Otherwise, it can't be an Isur d'oraita. So, there is a machloikis, and most authorities agree with the Rashba against the Ravad. That this halacha of Ein Mevatlin Isur l'chatchila is only a din d'rabanan, and not a din d'oraita. And proof to the pudding that the Rashba is correct is that the halacha says that this particular item is permissible if you did it b'shogeg. If you did it b'shogeg. If it was a d'oraita, then the action should be prohibited under all circumstances, no matter what you did. I can't think of a din d'oraita, which if done b'mezid is prohibited, and if done b'shogeg is permissible. I have never heard of such a thing. I've heard of gradations of punishment. Yes, if you mechal Shabbos b'mezid, you get skila, you get stone. If you mechal Shabbos b'shogeg, you bring a korban chatas. But it's still, the activity is still asur midoraita. But to claim that it's asur midoraita, and you go from an extreme, from mezid is prohibited, shogeg is permissible, that is highly unlikely, and usually we do not do so. We do not do so. We do not say something like that. So that's what the shach points out, that this is a machloikis between the Ravid and the Rashba.
The Rashba doesn't say what
really
hangs it and what
possibly hangs it. No, he doesn't specifically say it.
But yeah. The Shach should say it.
Somebody should say it for us, but they don't. And it's a minority opinion, and yeah. Yeah. Now, going for a second back to page number five, going back to page number five. Right there on the top of the page says the Rama. The Rama is in Rashi script. The Karo is in bold print, and it's more typed out, but it's not Rashi, it's regular lettering. So that's the different way you can know in the middle of the page who's speaking. The Mechaber is always in bold print in regular lettering, And Rashi, and the Rama is in smaller print, but Rashi letters. And he writes, does the Rama, the asurim limachro gamkein liYisrael acher. See, if I create the ratio of bittul, the only one who is not allowed to eat it is me. But I know you're allowed to eat it. So I'll sell it to you. And you can eat it. And I make a profit. I don't lose it. Says the Rama, no. Can't do that. Shelo yehanu mima shebitlo. If we would go allow you to go ahead and sell and again to sell it, then the Chachamim didn't accomplish anything by prohibiting it. So there's an easy way out. You won't lose a thing. So in order to make sure that you are actually out of a few dollars, they penalized you to such an extent that if you go ahead and create the ratio of bitul, it is asur and you're not allowed to sell it. If you did, okay, so you'll violate this Issa Midrabanan. So it's taken pretty seriously, Midrabanan, not to take advantage of the laws of Bitul. If it happens, fine and dandy. If it doesn't happen, don't put your hands on it. Yeah, he just said that there is.
You can't sell it, but let's say it was something you could feed to your cat.
No, you cannot. He doesn't say that, but he doesn't want you to derive any benefit.
And
that is correct. That's correct.
Makes sense.
What?
In other words, that any hana that you would get would go under the category of amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Okay. Now, we're going to build on going back to our primary Gemara. We're going to introduce a new halacha tonight. Now back to page number one, which is on the back. It's the second page in the packet. For some reason, the machine switched the orders on me. Page number one. So you should recognize this. We've been looking at this page for quite some time. So I bracketed where we are up to. This is Kuf Ches Amud Aleph. Omar Rav. So Rav will now introduce a new halacha that is dependent on a minority opinion, who we generally don't follow, but he is quoted all over Shas. Omar Rav. Kevan shenatan ta'am b'chaticha. Once what? Once, here's the case. Once the drop of milk imparted its ta'am to this piece of meat upon which it fell, chaticha atzma na'aseit nivela. The whole piece of meat now becomes as if it was a piece of non-kosher meat. From the drop of milk, which now can be tasted by beefsteak, you now are have in your pot a as if it was a piece of nevela non-kosher meat. Okay. Now here's going to be the application of this. I have 5 pieces of meat in my pot. 5 pieces of meat in my pot.
You don't know.
Okay? I know exactly which one the milk fell onto, and there was no gravy. If you remember, Tosfot pointed that out. No gravy. So in the absence of gravy, what can the taste not do to the other pieces? It can't transfer. Good. So it's limited to this piece of meat. So now, after it did spread to that one piece and beefsteak tasted it, what do I now have in my pot? I have 4 kosher pieces of meat and 1 non-kosher piece of meat. Okay? Ladies, you're in charge of your own kitchens. What would you say is the halacha under those circumstances? Now, what would you do when you know that happened? What are you supposed to do? Good, take that piece of meat and what? Throw it in the garbage can.
But did that piece of meat just chafe your pot and now?
No, well, 1 second. We'll worry about the pot later. The problem is you did not take that piece of meat out quickly and you forgot or somebody came in and mixed up the pieces of meat. Say that in one more second. Hold on. Now, there are 5 pieces of meat in this pot. 1, I know for a fact, is not kosher. The problem is, I don't know which one.
We have
beefsteak. Beefsteak is not going to help in this case. I'll tell you why in a second. Because whenever you're dealing with similar products or identical products, but one is kosher and one is not kosher, taste doesn't accomplish anything. You know why? Because a piece of meat is always going to taste like what? A piece of meat. You can't notice... That's correct. Okay, that was correct. But now, what happened to this piece of meat? It's mixed up. And what halachic status does this piece of meat now have?
Non-kosher.
Good. If I have in my pot 4 kosher pieces of meat and 1 non-kosher piece of meat, can you ask beefsteak to determine which one it is? No. You know why? Because beefsteak can't tell.
I don't see why the pot doesn't matter. Once that
big
meat is in my pot, 1 second, it made my pot tray.
No, forget about the pot. It didn't make the pot yet tray.
It
did not make the pot yet tray. Because there are more kosher pieces than non-kosher pieces.
But why wouldn't he be able to taste it if the whole criteria is no same time?
Because after he already tasted it once, we now make believe as if the milk doesn't exist anymore. It's not a question of basar b'chalav. What is the name of this piece of meat? Nevela. Good. So if you have a piece of nevela mixed in with kosher pieces of meat, can beefsteak tasting it determine which is the nevela meat?
The milk is already out of the picture.
Out of the picture. That's what Rav's chidush is. That once beefsteak tasted it, we no longer look at this piece of meat as a combination of what? Meat and milk. It's regular nevela. Good. So now I ask you, what would you say if you have 5 pieces of meat in your pot, and 1 you discovered was nevela, and you have no idea, no way to determine which is the nevela? So, good. Tell me why they're all okay. Good. The halacha is like the chachamim, which the Gemara is not going to quote now. But the halacha is, you're allowed to eat all 5 of them. Why? Because when you have a mixture of min bimino, a mixture of similar products, taste beefsteak accomplishes nothing. So how do the Chachamim say the Torah tells us to resolve this dilemma? Acharei rabim lahatot. You follow the majority. So you don't even need 5 pieces of meat. You need 2 pieces of meat. 2 pieces of meat that are kosher, 1 that is not kosher. You don't recognize which is the non-kosher one. In this case, the one which the milk dropped on it. You don't recognize it. You're allowed to eat all 3 of them. You're allowed to eat all 3. There is a chumrah quoted by some Rishonim, it's the Rashba, who says, you know what? In order not to benefit from something that is not kosher, arbitrarily take out 1 piece of meat and what? And throw it away. So you don't benefit from it. But the halach is against him. The halach is against him. You're allowed to eat all 3 pieces of meat. And I'll tell you why. When you pick up piece number 1, you have a right and you eat it. you have a right to say, this one was the kosher one. When you pick up number two, you have a right to say, this was the kosher one. When you pick up number three, you say, I ate the non-kosher one, and this is the kosher one. So the Torah, the halacha, allows you to eat all three, because we paskin, like the chachamim, that we apply rov. However, Rav is not going to say that. Let's read Rav's statement now. Omar Rav, Kevon shenasan ta'am b'chaticha, once the milk gave its taste into the chaticha, the first piece upon which it fell, and who determined that? Beefsteak. Chaticha atzma na'ase nivela. That piece of meat now becomes nivela. The oseret kol hachatichot kulan. It now goes ahead and prohibits all of the four other pieces of meat in the pot. Mipnei shehein mina. Because this piece of meat is the same type of meat as what? As the other. It's five pieces of steak. And just the two more lines. Amale mar zutra berei de Rav Mari l'Ravina. Said Rav Zutra, the son of Rav Mari, to Ravina. Michte, let us see. Rav kiman omar l'shma'ate. In accordance with whose opinion did Rav state his halacha? Ke Rabbi Yehuda. De omar min bemino lo batel. Min bemino is never batel, even if it's a ratio of 1 to 1,000. We do not hold like Rabbi Yehuda, thank God. But the Gemara discusses his opinion all over the joint. All over. Rabbi Yehuda is quoted seriously, and there are some Rishonim who actually paskin like him, but the halacha is, we'll see it next time, we'll see the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is against him. But Rav always paskined like Rabbi Yehuda. He follows Rabbi Yehuda quite frequently in Shas. And so Rav believed that in this particular case, all of the pieces of meat in this pot now become nevela. Because I can't identify which was the nevela. And once I have a ta'aruvot, a mixture of min bimino, two similar products, the halacha is, it's never batel. Never batel. So that's halacha number one that I want to introduce to you. That's Rabbi Huda's opinion. Now, go to page number two, which is on the front side of this page. Okay, and we're going to look at the top line of the Gemara. This is Daf Kuf Amud Aleph in Maseches Chulin. Kuf Amud Aleph, page number one. It's on the back of page number two. Yeah, it is page two. It says I wrote on page two.
No, you just said that.
Oh, excuse me. So, page number two. So I'll tell you what the Gemara is commenting on. 2 weeks ago, we read a Mishnah in Gidon Asher on 96b in Chulin, where the Mishnah said, if you remember, that if you have a piece of meat cooking with the Gidon Asher, remember that, the Gidon Asher issue? Good. So who remembers what the Mishnah said? What do you have to ask beefsteak? Who do I have? You know the answer to this.
Can you taste it?
You beefsteak, can you notice the taste of the sciatic nerve in this piece of meat?
And how do you ever know the taste? Because you never tasted it.
But he does. He, beefsteak, knows it. He knows because he eats it. He eats sirloin steak. He knows what it means. Fine. So the Mishnah then says, V'chein chaticha shel nevelai. Bracket at the top line. V'chein chaticha shel nevelai. Not only is this halacha true in relationship to what? In relationship to what? To the Giranashe, but it applies also to a piece of nevela meat that's got mixed up with other kosher meat. What do you do? What do you do? You see if it got mixed up with other things. You see if it parted its taste to what? To the other products. So if your piece of meat fell in, non-kosher meat, fell into your vegetable stew, a vegetable stew, and that is a little piece of meat of nevela in there, you give it to beefsteak. If he says, I notice a meaty taste, you're not allowed to eat it. If he doesn't notice it, you're allowed to eat it. Ask the Gemara. V'tavtil beruba? Question mark. V'tavtil beruba? What does that mean? It should be batel berov. What's the majority in this pot? Vegetables. So it's, and even if there is some meat in it, how much? What type of meat is in my pot? Kosher meat. So it should, this little piece or this piece of meat that's cooking should be batel berov. Because we don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. That what? That if there's any meat in this pot, and all the meat is now going to become prohibited. We hold like the Chachamim that it's batel berov. Answers the Gemara. The Gemara will introduce two new halachot. I deliberately skipped those two lines where it says Hanicha, that's why I bracketed, because the Torah, the Gemara, as it often does, goes off on a little tangent, which I'm not interested in spending time now. Answers the Gemara. Sha'ani chaticha ho'il ure'uya lihit kabeid ba lifnei ha'orchim. Anybody want to take a stab at it? It's simple Chinese. Good, exactly. Good. It's a piece of meat which was substantial enough, I'm quoting you, that you would is worthy of serving it to what, to somebody who came for company. You invited somebody to your house, and this is something substantial that you would now what? Serve it to someone. Good. That, says the Gemara, is never batel. The Gemara introduces a new principle. When do I allow bitul to operate? When you're dealing with little pieces. If I have a little piece of meat that fell into what? Into another pot, so it's going to be batel berov. But if the prohibiting agent, a piece of nevela, is what? Is what? Is a substantial piece of meat. Had it been kosher, what would I have done? I now would have served it. That piece of meat never becomes batel. Never.
Are you talking about size or are you talking about quality?
I'm talking about you determined that.
But that could change.
You determined that.
That could change from one side to the other.
That is, it does. It is not an objective standard. I play no role in this decision. It's all in your hands to determine whether it's re'uya lehit kabed. So if in this society you, as a good chef, will say, this is worthy of serving to a distinguished guest, then it becomes, it's not batel. And what's the problem? I can't recognize it. If you know which is the nevela piece of meat, if you can recognize which one, just do what? Pick it up and throw it out. That's all. The problem here is, in every situation that we're talking about, you can't identify the prohibiting agent. That's why it's an issue. So even though if this halacha had not been introduced, under those circumstances, what would be the halacha? It would be batel. So too, here, the halacha is it's not batel. That's the halacha. Saying that this doesn't become, it has so much chashivut. Bitul means it's almost insignificant. Livatel means to annul it. You can't annul something that is so significant that you would it's worthy of serving it to somebody. I'm just going to tell you outside the third illustration, quoted in the Mishnah with the same principle. Dug tamei. Dug tamei. Does anybody know of a non-kosher fish? What?
Sturgeon.
Okay. So, a sturgeon got mixed up with everything else and you can't recognize it anymore. I don't know why, but you can't. Whatever it is, you can't not rip. The halacha is that a beria, a whole item, can never become batel. No matter how small it happens to be. No matter how small it is. If it's a full creature, beria is a creature, if it's a full, intact creature, it never becomes batel, no matter if the ratio is 10,000 to 1. What?
You say that about bugs also.
Yes, 100%. Yes. So here, the Chachamim, everyone agrees that these two exceptions are only midrabanan. Everyone agrees that these exceptions are not Torah based. These are midrabanan. Midrabanan. So it's called a chaticha haru'uya lehitkabed. So I'm just going to just tell you something about guys who go for smicha. Right? So you'll read this line of the Gemara, and then you'll study all the Rishonim, and then you have to open up Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, there are 10 pages on this one halacha of chaticha haru'uya lehitkabed. So it's a lot of learning. It really is. Yoredeya is a lot of learning. A lot of it is not terribly practical any longer, such as the laws. There's a whole section Yoredeya about the laws of what constitutes Hilchos Trefos. They don't even in my day, they didn't teach it in YU anymore. You know why? Because a rabbi will never ever get a question: is this kosher or not kosher? Is it a treif or not? You don't show it to your local rabbi. It's not like in Europe where your grandmother brought a chicken and has that question has been resolved in the slaughterhouse. And there's a mashgiach there. He knows the halacha. So they never go ahead and learn Hilchos Treifos. Years ago, obviously, they did. And just as a point of editorial, it was the one reason why Rav David Lifshitz, Zechrono Livracha, refused to sign the Smicha Klaf in YU. Because how can you not learn Hilchos Treifos? I had to learn Hilchos Treifos, he said. Everybody had learned Hilchos Treifos until the 50s, until the 60s and 70s. So he refused to be a co-signator to the Smicha. And they asked him, when the Rav stopped and so on and so forth. But he refused. He refused to do it. So this is, now, on the left-hand side of the page, I bracketed a couple of lines of Tosfos. Says Tosfos, on the left-hand side of the page, V'davar she'eino lo beria v'lo chaticha haru'uya litkabed. Anything that is not a whole item, not a beria, and it's not a piece of meat which you would consider worthy of serving a guest. Batel berov, says Tosfos. I, Tosfos, hold like the Chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda, who says that what? That it's never batel because it's min bimino. I believe like the Chachamim, it is batel berov. Ve'afilu isur midirabanan leka. Even a rabbinic prohibition does not exist. If something is batel min ha-Torah, as strange as it sounds, that I am going to eat something in this pot, which is definitely an avail, a piece of meat. Definitely. Definitely a trefa piece of meat. Definitely. But there's not only is there no isur de oraita, but there is no isur midrabanan. Kedamash mahacha, as our Gemara says. Our Gemara says that the only time that you are not permitted to eat it is if it was a chaticha haruya lekabed. But if it's not a chaticha, you can eat it, no problem. No problem. Just give me one second. Umihu, however, says Tosfos, Shema lechad gavra haya asur. Shema lechad gavra. What does that mean? What is lechad gavra? One person. Maybe one person shouldn't eat all three pieces of meat. Share it. Give one to some person. But Tosfos only says that maybe. And the halacha is against Tosfos. The halacha is one person is allowed to eat all of the pieces of meat because we believe in bitul berov.
I'd be more comfortable with that because then at least each person themselves could say,
I'm eating the kosher one. That's why the Rashba said you have to do that. Either you throw one out if you're eating them all yourself or divide it up. Then each one of them can claim, this is my piece of meat. Mine's the kosher one. You got the non-kosher one. That is correct. So so Tosfos introduces that as a possibility. He's not sure. I'm telling you that the majority halacha is you don't have to be concerned about that. The halacha is you can eat something knowing that it is not kosher. And ultimately, you're benefiting from something that is not kosher. You're benefiting from it. Had you been able to identify it, you'd have to throw it out. But Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that min bimino is never batel. Min bimino is never batel. And he applies this all over Shas. All over Shas. Min bimino ain't no batel.
In practical terms,
how did
anything that was
Nevela about their Kushrim?
It's, I don't know.
Maybe the, the butcher gave you, something that was non-kosher and then you found out about it. I don't know. Not sure. You put it into your pot, and then somebody came to you and said that the shechita was no good.
I can't picture how this would happen.
Okay, that plays no role in the Gemara. If it's how it's going to happen, who cares? Right. I hear. Yeah. Now, I should have photostated this Ramah. The Ramah says, as a compromise opinion between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, I'll show it to you next week, that in order to eat this, perhaps you should not rely on Rov, but make sure that there is at least Shishim against the piece of meat. Yes. Instead of relying on Bata Barov, rely on Bata Bashishin. And it's a little difficult why he says that. In light of the explanation that I gave to you a couple of weeks ago, what does Shishim accomplish? What did I tell you is, how did they get to Shishim? No, but how did... Correct. The halacha believes that taste cannot be discerned and noticed or diffused if it's more than shishim. Can't taste it. Well, if it's based on a taste bud test, then, as I said 10 minutes ago, if you have two pieces of meat, but one is nevela, even if it's 70 to 1, you're never going to be able to not taste the nevela, because nevela and kosher meat don't taste any different. So if the reasoning for relying on exactly 61 to 1 is based on the test case, then the Rama would find it a little difficult to explain to us, and he has to tell us why. Why are you saying, you know what? As a precaution, don't rely on the Chachamim. The Chachamim say if it's 2-1, you're allowed to go ahead and eat it. 2-1, you can eat all three pieces. Yes, it's a huge leap. But my question is not so much the leap, it just logically it doesn't accomplish anything. Exactly, it's mixing two different standards of bitul. And I'll give you an illustration of how the law of bitul works according to the Chachamim. The primary case of following majority is not quoted in the Torah of pieces of meat that fall into your pot. Does anybody happen to know what is the case in Parshat Mishpatim where the rules of Acharei Rabim Lahatot are formulated? It's Bet Din. A case is brought to a Bet Din. So if it's a monetary case, you have three judges. How do you make a decision in this case? The Torah says you don't have to have a unanimous opinion. You can have a split decision. Two say guilty, one says innocent. Now, when Bet Din presents its findings, its decision to the two litigants, they don't tell him it was 2-1. What do they say? Bet Din ruled you are guilty. As if all three said that you are guilty. Same thing is in a Beis Din of 23, which is required for capital punishment cases. There, in order to acquit, 12 to 11 will acquit such an individual. To convict an individual, it's based on a pasuk and a gemara in Sanhedrin. You can never convict based on a majority of one. You have to have at least a majority of two. Since there is no such thing as an even-numbered Beis Din, in effect, in order to convict, you need 13 to 10, a majority of three. But when the decision is made, we do not tell the litigant that you know what, this was a split decision. 10 judges actually voted in favor of innocence. No. Beis Din made a statement, all 23 of us, that you are guilty. So what happens in a court of law? What happens? Once the majority have taken up a vote and a decision has been reached, what now must the minority judges do? What must the minority judges... They have to say, we agree with this decision. They can't go walk out of court and say, hey, you know, I voted against it. These guys don't know what they're talking about. You can't do that. You cannot do that. So under those circumstances, that's what happens in a Beis Din Midoraita. Therefore, the Chachamim, who apply this standard of Rov not only to a Beis Din situation, but even to pieces of meat, what happens to that one piece of meat that got Batel Barov? It's no longer available. It now takes on the identity of the majority of the... And when I pick up each one, what do I have a right to say? It's kosher. That's the logic behind it. It is a strange analogy. I grant you that. I grant it to it.
They were desperate to find a way out.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
What's the principle with Hefsid Merubah?
Yes.
Is there anything to do with...
No.
Nothing about
Hefsid Merubah rarely overrides an Issa D'Oraita. It often overrides an Issa D'Rabbanan, but not an Issa D'Oraita under no circumstances. In fact, now that you mention it, go to page 6 for just a moment. Page 6. Up until now, when we spoke about that you're not permitted to create the ratio of bitul, that was talking about if I had a real piece of biblically prohibited meat. Or basa b'chalav, things like that. What happens if that which fell into my pot was only asur midrabanan? Midoraisa, you're allowed to eat it. The rabbanan say, don't eat it. So the mechaber says, isur shel divrehem ein me'arvin oto biyadayim kidei l'vatlo. If I have something that is only asur midrabanan, only asur midrabanan, you are not permitted to throw it into your kosher pot knowing that I'm going to be mevatalit when it cooks away. You are not permitted to do so. V'im asa kain, if you did so, b'mezid asur. If you did it deliberately, just like on a biblical level, the rabbis will apply their things even to a non-kosher item midrabanan. Aval im nafal me'atzmo. If this item fell in by itself, you didn't put it in there. Someone unwillingly did it, or it just fell in. Ve'ein beheter k'dei levatlo. And there is just insufficient ratio in order to be mevatalit. Marbe alav u'mevatlo. You're allowed to add to the ratio in order to create the ratio of bitul, because it's only midrabanan. So the rabbanan are a little more lenient in their application of the law according to Karo. And this is the absolute halakha based on the Gemara. However, the Rama, who always decides to be machmir, writes in the line below, V'yesh omrim de'ein levatel isur derabanan o lehosif alav kimo. The next word is isur de'oraita. So I just saved the tree. Isur de'oraita. That the Rama says, no, I don't think there are any consequent differences between an isur de'oraita or an isur derabanan. Under both cases, not only are you not allowed to create the mixture, but even if the mixture was automatically created, you cannot add to create the ratio. Whereas Karo, and that's the actual primary halacha, is that you are permitted to do so. And Karo has a very clear-cut Gemara that says you're allowed to do so. Here is the case. Here is the case. Are you allowed to burn wood on Yom Tov? For cooking. Yes. Even not for cooking. Are you allowed to burn wood on Yom Tov? The answer is yes. Havar on Yom Tov is mutter. Good. However, if the wood is muktza, you're not allowed to put it into the fire. Not allowed to. So how can wood be muktza? It fell off the tree on Yom Tov. So when Erev Yom Tov came and Yom Tov was starting, could you possibly have thought that I'm going to use that wood that's on the tree for my fire? Of course not. No. Why? Because I can't break the branch on Yom Tov. So that wood is muktza. And you're not allowed to burn, you're not allowed to put something that's muktza into your oven. Not allowed to. But what happens, thinking of crazy cases, it fell off the tree and went straight into the oven. Straight into the oven. Straight into the fire. Exactly, make it easier. It's a fire in your backyard. It fell straight in. Now there is a mixture in your pot, in your fire. A mixture of muktza and what? And muta. Now, under normal circumstances, what would you say about such a mixture? I'm going to introduce another principle tonight. You cannot use it, even if it's one piece against 1,000 pieces of heter. Why? Because muktza is called a davar sheyeshlo matirin. Muktza is something that is going to become mutter. When is it going to become mutter? After Yom Tov. So any time that the prohibiting item has an opportunity to become mutar just by the passage of time, it's never batel. Can you think of another illustration? Chametz on Pesach. Chametz on Pesach is never batel. Why? Just put it in the refrigerator and eat it after Pesach. Then you don't have to rely on bitul any longer. It's no longer chametz. No longer is chametz. So here, that is true. But the Gemara says, since it's only midrabanan and you didn't put it in, it fell in by itself. The Gemara says you're allowed to take non-muktzah wood and what? Add to the fire and be mevatel the muktzah wood. You're allowed to. So the Gemara itself supports Karo. Karo said that if you're dealing with an Issa d'Rabbanan and it fell in, you are permitted to add to create the ratio. That's what the Gemara says. The piece of wood fell in by itself. Under normal circumstances, bitul would not be effective. But if you now created the ratio so that there is a majority of kosher wood, not muktzah wood, under those circumstances, you can cook away with this fire, and that's where Karo derives his halacha from. From that Gemara in Beitza, and Daf Dalet Amud Bet. Yeah. All right, stop here, Rabotai, and we'll continue next Devach, regular time Wednesday night. There will be a share.